Welcome to Beyond the Rock Podcast. I'm Jeremy Arntz, and my co-host Emily is out of town for the weekend, so you guys are stuck with me. Today's guest is Melanie Russell. She's a friend of mine. She is studying emergency management, and she's a climber. How you doing today, Mel?
Hey, how's it going?
It's going good. So this is going to be kind of a weird interview because we're friends and climbing partners, and where our lives intersect, I actually tell better stories than you do.
So this is fair. You do.
The first question I had is I kind of wanted to learn about you before climbing. You were a semi-professional mountain biker, or?
Oh, wow. That's a pretty hefty title. Not a semi-professional in any capacity.
Okay. You were some sort of junior level mountain biker. I don't know.
I definitely recreationally rode mountain bikes, but I loved downhill. And so downhill definitely isn't for the faint of heart, but I certainly have far more friends that would probably be scratching their heads if they heard semi-professional.
So, I mean, but what were you involved with when you were younger? Was it mountain biking or was it another sport?
Well, yeah, when I was younger, tennis.
So
that's probably the closest I had ever gotten to being considered a professional athlete.
Okay, so tell us about how you got involved with tennis and what that was like at that level anyway.
Sure. So tennis is a sport that ran in my family. So, you know, a lot of people talk about football and baseball, but tennis is what my grandpa played, what his dad played, and it's what my dad played. So it was really a family event. And I started, I was really, really, really little when I started. So I played recreationally. And then as I got a little bit older, I started playing in a circuit. So the Southwest Junior Open and Southwest Junior Pro. And before I tore my ACL, I think I topped at like a ranking of like 25th in the Southwest, whatever states were included in that. I don't remember.
Very cool. I used to work with a guy that was ranked like number 10 in the state or something like that, but he didn't take it very seriously. There was times when he missed tournaments because he would get too drunk on Friday nights.
Honestly, that's a thing. Is it? Is this a PG? Like, what rating is this show?
You can swear or say whatever you want.
Okay. I remember one tournament I went to, and, you know, tennis is not a sport typically associated with people in lower socioeconomic statuses. I got lucky because I had some scholarships, but I was surrounded by a bunch of kids with money. And I remember the night before a tournament just seeing two people that I looked up to so much, and they were caught in a bathroom doing a bunch of blow, and my mind was blown. Like, I was heartbroken, but then I don't know. It was also kind of justice too, because they weren't like the nicest people either. So I don't know. It worked out for everyone, but I was just like blown away. They just didn't care at all.
Yeah, it's weird. Like, I always thought it was weird with him. Like, maybe he was just naturally talented. I don't know. I felt like, you know, if you worked hard enough to be number 10 in the state, like, why would you not care? But I mean, I've been there too, like, where you have a certain amount of natural talent at something and you just don't care to work harder to improve it or whatever, but never at that level, I guess.
Oh, well, and also to be fair, these kids were like 14, 15 years old. They just honestly had probably a lot of money, and I don't know. It was a very interesting culture for a while to be involved in.
Interesting. So let's talk about where you were before you started climbing, because I know you'd kind of gone through some stuff and that kind of led you to climbing. So can you tell us about that?
Yeah. Okay. How far back do you want to go here?
I don't know. How far back do you want to go?
I mean, I can do like recent events. I kind of actually talked a little bit about that today, and I can share a little bit about what I've also openly shared with the Thick Ambassadors. And so in 2018, I had lost my two secure attachments, my grandpa and my grandma. And the like, really, are we allowed to cuss?
Yeah.
Before I like go any further, I'm like, the really shitty thing about that was that my long-term 5-year relationship had ended the day after my grandma had passed away. And so I was just like, all right, like this blows all around. And I, at that point, just had so much on my heart, like so much built up, pent up, like just all over the place. And I picked up a habit that my family had proactively tried to keep me from my entire life, which was drinking. I come from a background of a lot of heavy, heavy drinkers and or addictive personalities. And so it was just something like growing up, I just wasn't interested in, I didn't want, like, you know, we already had enough problems. I didn't want to add one more onto my plate. But that one seemed like a fun one at the time. And so, my thing though, is that I only drank tequila and nothing else. And so be like, you know, cash Tuesday night and everyone's having a beer and I'm, you know, putting back a half bottle of tequila sometimes. And so it got excessive really quick and it got out of control really quick. But it did what I wanted it to do. I wanted to party and have fun and, you know, not think about anything. And so at one point that, you know, there's this other caveat to that, that I don't talk about very often, which is I knew the ending of that relationship was very intentionally done to make room for the next big thing in my life that was going to require a lot from me. And it was going to lean me in towards a new purpose for that season of my life. And I just wasn't there for it yet. I didn't want to hear it. I was really stuck in some codependent ways. And so it was really tough because I was like, why me? How me? Like, I'm not good enough for this purpose. You picked the wrong girl for this. And just, it can't be me. It's too much. And at some point, like maybe anyone who's ever felt a calling to do something bigger and better than them, it doesn't go away. It gets louder and louder and louder. And if you're lucky, sometime it becomes louder than your insecurities. And so someday, like one day I woke up and was like, man, like I cannot ignore this thing that is sitting on my heart and on my soul anymore. Like I have to answer that. And so without really knowing what direction I was supposed to be going into or what I was supposed to be doing, I started off by going back to grad school and didn't really know what I should be doing, but felt like I should. And then that also led to a couple other things, ultimately led to, let's say like a somewhat of a rock bottom. And I met Bree. Well, I didn't meet Bree. Bree was a friend of mine, but I reached out to Bree. She connected me with you, Jeremy, and I started climbing. And fast forward several different situations, epiphanies and fun times and all of that. And we're here.
Here we are. And Mel has become kind of like the heart and soul of our climbing group. And I'm like the dad.
I'm the dad.
Yeah, I got to keep everybody in line. Cool. So how's the climbing adventure been so far?
I mean, so one of the first things that I talked to Bree about, you know, she, if you ever get the chance to work with her, highly recommend it. 10 out of 10 stars, Gnarly Girl Fitness, a little plug in for you. But one of the first things that she has you do is write out your vision for yourself, and not just like a vision for what you want your body to look like. Like she wants to know where you see yourself. And so my vision for myself was being like, before I even knew I was going to climb, I was picturing myself like on top of this mountain with a solid core group of friends, with our dogs, like laughing, like being free, like just overall whole. And so the big focus was on being whole. And through that, like essentially when I started climbing, I thought that that vision was not something I would have for a year, 2 years, or even several years. Like I thought I was going to be in a dark place for a long time. Within like maybe a month of having that vision and climbing, I was already experiencing some of the best adventures and experiences with the climbing group. And, you know, climbing is addicting for so many reasons, but one of the biggest reasons I think it's compelling, especially for people who may have addictive personalities is that there's so many short-term wins that are generated through it. And so, you know, we call that small victories that turn around and turn into what, like your self-efficacy, your belief in being able to accomplish things. And when you're trying to pull yourself out of a rut or a cave or whatever it is you're doing, those small victories are the difference between getting out and not getting out. So I'd say that my experience so far has really been extraordinary through like a physical sense and challenging my body, but also mentally and spiritually.
Very cool. Yeah. I mean, I kind of had the same, some of the same experiences in my climbing as well, but and you happened to just join our climbing group right as it exploded. And I mean, part of that's because you brought some people in as well, but so it's been an interesting time, and it's been an interesting time for me because for years we wanted to have a bigger group, and now we have a bigger group, but that brings along different challenges, like trying to coordinate everybody. And anyway, yeah, it's fun times. But let's see what else. How did the idea for Thick Climbing come about?
Okay, great question. So honestly, I really did sit here one day because I was like, I know we were talking about it. And yeah, so, okay. I think I backtraced to exactly how it started. And my friend Tanea up in Dallas, and she doesn't know this yet, I haven't told her, but I went to go see a show with her one time, and she said something about being thick with two C's. And I was like, oh my gosh, I haven't heard anyone say that in a long time. That's funny. And literally maybe a day or two later, you and I were climbing, and we were joking around about something. I think I had said something about like being thick with two C's and then thick climbers. And then we were just like joking around about it, just saying like, yeah, we're just thick, like we're thick climbers. And so it honestly just started off as more of like sticker propaganda. Like, all right, cool. You know, we have a saying, like almost like a crew, right? Like a crew name. But that definitely was just the start.
Yeah, for sure. For me, it was just a joke, kind of a joke. We joke around about it, be about being thicker climbers. And then one day, I don't know what, I was trying to think about it today because I'm like, what made me actually take the time to make the first sticker? Because I feel like we were talking and then like you had some other stuff you went off to do and then you seemed kind of bummed out about something. And I'm like, you know what, I'm going to make that sticker that we talked about. Maybe that will be, you know, exciting for her. Cause you see, I don't remember what it was. I don't even remember what you were bummed out about, or maybe you weren't bummed out at all, but I don't know. And then, we made it, and then you ran the 5K and went and watched that. And then we were hanging out. Evie was sitting in the car being antisocial. And then you and I were hanging out waiting to get seats for brunch. Yeah. And then, we just decided to give away those stickers, and then the response was way more than I thought it was going
to
be.
Okay, that response blew me away. And just for anyone who happens to be listening here, Jeremy is the kind of person, he, like, if he doesn't know it, one of his things is acts of service. Like, throughout our entire friendship, you've definitely been someone who's, like, you'll do things as an act of service, and that's, like, the way you show you love your friends. And so I will never forget the day that you were like, you made the stickers. Like you just went for it. And that's one thing I appreciate about our friendship is that I'm a person that has ideas left and right. And like there are times, don't get me wrong, where I'll hop in and I'm like, okay, now we just have to do it. But there's creative ideas that I'll sit on for the rest of my life and won't move on them. But I love and so much appreciate that you're like, nah, we have to do this. And so you just went for it.
Thanks. It's actually kind of funny because I'm cleaning up my garage so that I can put a home wall up. And as I'm going through the garage, I'm throwing out all these notebooks and stuff that I have. And I found some business cards for ideas that I had, and like those stretchy rubber bracelets. I had like an idea and I printed some up as like promos or whatever. And I was like, you know what? I used to have ideas. And I think now I'm just more a facilitator for other people's ideas, which is just as fine. But you, and the other day you sent me something and I'm like, yeah, let's do it. And you're like, you're supposed to not tell me to do these dumb things. And I'm like, have you not learned I'm a facilitator for your ideas? I mean, it wasn't a bad idea either.
It really wasn't a good idea. I was waiting for you to be like, that's not a good idea, Mel.
No, I think it would be a great idea. And I think that idea that you had would have had some traction. But
maybe we should try it on like a sample population.
For sure. Anyway, we're talking about something that no one knows anything about. So, then Thick just kind of snowballed, right? And I mean, for me, one of the reasons that I was super excited about it was that, you know, we've talked about it before. There was this New York Times article where this celebrity trainer who knows nothing about climbing said basically you have to be in great shape and of optimum weight to be a climber. And I'm like, dude, I've been climbing for 2 years and I'm none of those things. And I'm an okay climber. So this shouldn't stop anybody else from trying it. And so what was some of your thoughts behind starting the message that we've started, which is change the algorithm, climbing is for everyone?
So first, like, I want to address that article fundamentally is flawed because it's deciding for people what their goal should be and not giving them a chance for them to educate themselves and figure out what their goal should be for themselves. And by that, I mean, this guy is assuming that everyone wants to climb at a certain capacity, certain cadence, a certain level, in a certain way. And that's not necessarily everybody's goal. And you can be a V0 climber for your entire life and you're still a climber and you could still have fun. You could be a V8 plus climber and hate it. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, for sure.
So that being said, and we've been pretty open about this, I think, in that our climbing mission has actually evolved a couple of times since we've started it. And it started off as body positivity. And we kept saying climbing is for everyone. And a beautiful thing happened. We had para climbers. We have climbers of different ethnic backgrounds. We have all these different age groups of climbers. We have pregnant climbers, moms, single parents. And so when we said climbing is for everyone, I did not originally anticipate the amount of groups who were going to feel like at one point they were marginalized by the system. And so it started off as a body positivity movement and has since turned in to meet the needs of what we clearly need, which is changing the algorithm. Because ultimately, what's happening, and I don't have to get too far into it, but let's just say for myself, I'm a brand new climber. I go on Instagram because that's where I do some of my like very surface level research on anything. And I type in climbing and I look to see who's who should I follow? Like, what should I, you know, what accounts are going to be meaningful to me? And the most popular accounts are, you know, usually a certain body type and a certain grade. And so there wasn't a lot of representation of other climbers. And so automatically my thought and my training adapts to say, if I want to be successful, I need to be able to do this or look like this. And I even saw that as a reflection in my work with Bree when we were doing our training. Said, okay, what do I need to do? How do I need to look to be stronger? And at first my mindset was, I need to lose weight. I need to lose weight. Well, guess what? I lost weight. And guess what? I still got hurt. And so what I've learned since then is that algorithm doesn't accurately show the diversity in climbing and also like different training styles for different body types. I'm like, I didn't necessarily need to lose weight. I needed to have more mobility training in my exercises. And so I think that's probably a tangent, but really our mission is to change the algorithm because we found a need to show representation with everyone. And that mission truly, in my opinion, expands far out of climbing, but climbing is the niche that we have on the market that we have a voice in. So I say we go for it.
No, yeah, for sure. It's where it's our sport of choice. So, although, you know, we aren't limited ourselves to climbing, but that's where we focus our energy at. And the one thing I don't know about you, but the one thing I was super surprised about was I wasn't sure if people would lean into the term thick or not. Like, not just other people who aren't thick, but even people who, like, just embrace it. You know what I mean? Like, even people who are thick embracing it, you know?
Yeah. And just like anything else in life, it's not for everyone, you know? Some people can appreciate it from afar. And we've even had people who are like, how are you guys going to say you're thick climbers? I like the first bit of criticism I received on there was, how are you going to say you're thick climbers when your female co-founder is still quote unquote relatively thin? And I was like, relative is the key word here, right? Like, relative to what? That's the point. Like, what my body shape and size looks like, it doesn't matter. Like, it doesn't matter at all. And that's also why we always say, like, you're thick in the way that you love, you're thick in your courage, and you're thick in the way you wear your skin. So again, moving away, I think, a little bit more from the body shape type and moving into like thick skin than anything else, to be able to stand up and say, these are our needs, and we need representation, we need diversity, and we need inclusion.
So what are you getting your master's degree in?
So my master's degree is a master's of science in leadership with an emphasis in emergency management and homeland security.
So you're super excited about the pandemic? I guess that's not the way to put it, but you know what I mean.
So, honestly, I'm getting towards the tail end, so I should be done in the end of June, right? And I'll be honest with you, I was really starting to struggle because like everything was what ifs, and there wasn't a lot of applicable things that I could, you know, I couldn't conceptualize some of the information. I was starting to really struggle. It's a lot of reading, a lot of law. And so I'm not saying I'm excited about the pandemic, but I am relieved that I can take advantage of what's happening right now, so I can better understand how to help serve people in the future. Because most likely this won't be the last time we experience something like this. And if it's going to happen, no matter what, it is important to learn from it. Right. And so, it's very draining. It's exhausting. But I think I've found a comfortable place to exist right now within it. I don't want to be like the main source of information for it, because there's professionals who are in the field who are there for that. But I do like to be a person who's able to speak to some of those decisions that are being made.
Yeah, and I would say that from as a friend and as an outsider, like, I feel like you've... this is like the most energized I've seen you about something in a long time, besides climbing, I should say.
That's right.
And I think you were talking about getting injured earlier, and I was going to say something about the fact that like how hard you've gone at climbing, and that's kind of a stereotypical newbie thing, and then getting injured as well from it. I somehow avoided that, but I've gotten a lot of injuries over the years in climbing. So let's talk about the pandemic. Okay. Let's see. It is it's day 37 for me, I think, of being in quarantine. They're just starting to now, different states are talking about opening up and the plan to open up. And I think it's going to backfire. But I don't know, what are your thoughts about opening up now?
Yeah, this is a hot question. I was actually just talking to a friend that I have. And she runs some really cool projects over in Arizona, and, using her platform to kind of do what we do and like spread messages and connect people. And so we were having a conversation around opening the industry, and ultimately after about a 2-hour conversation, it ended up being that if I'm going to personally voice my thoughts on things, that I'm going to focus on what, like, the section of emergency management that I care a lot about, which is preparedness. And so, one, it's important to understand that states are all listening to essentially the same source of information. And so when we get upset at a particular government and saying, you're making this decision and you're putting people's lives at risk, know that the same people who did not have states go into shelter in place fast are also the same experts that are trying to open up the economy again, potentially too soon. And so, one, I'll preface this, I'm not an expert yet, at least, but I will, my personal opinion is that eventually, like, we do need to stimulate the economy in some capacity. On the other hand, it's like they say in the military, life over limb. Like, the economy can recover in some capacity down the line. I'm more concerned about human life. I think that there, we talked about herd immunity and it's unethical. And I think that if this decision is being made to stimulate the economy, then it's unethical. And we need to think more about that. And I think the majority of people really listen to their governments without doing research. And so it bothers me and it worries me that people are potentially just going to say, okay, whatever. On the other end of that, though, what we can do is we can encourage people to think for themselves. And so what I told my friend when we were on the phone is that these decisions are being made, but guess what? You potentially still have the ability to shelter in place. A lot of businesses are letting and allowing people to say, hey, if you are not comfortable yet in coming back, you can work virtually still, since many figured it out. And for the people that I've talked to that are unable to figure out how to work virtually, I've tried to get them connected to job fairs. So it's really tough. I don't want to use all as a blanket statement because everyone's situation is different. But if you have the ability to continue socially distancing and being mindful, I would personally encourage it. You think about all the people who, I've heard people say, oh, I had COVID and they let me go. They said I could be in public 3 days after. I've heard people say 12 to 14 days after. And the reason why we're hearing so many different things is because we don't actually know. Like, that's the whole point. When we don't hear experts giving out like solidified information, that means that there isn't solidified information that's available to the public because it's still shifting. And so to me, that's still a high risk. I don't know what it's going to mutate. I don't know how it's going to mutate. I'm not saying don't live your life, but if it means like, hey, there's a festival, should we hold it or not, or go to it or not? I'm going to say no. That's a big fat no.
Yeah, I don't, I'm hoping that the company I work for will allow us to continue to work from home for a while. I don't plan on, well, I mean, if I have to, I have to go back to work, but it is what it is. But I would rather stay home. And I definitely don't plan on going. I know in Texas, they're talking about opening up gyms, and I don't know if that's going to apply to climbing gyms or not, but I definitely don't plan on being in a climbing gym anytime soon, hence why I'm building the home wall. Yeah, and I think that the people that are talking about opening up the economies now are not listening to anybody with expertise in medicine. They're really just thinking about economics or getting reelected or whatever it is, and not really thinking about what the health ramifications of it necessarily are. Or they're of the mindset, like you're talking about, like the herd immunity mindset, like people can just go out and they should be allowed to risk their lives if they want to. And it's not even, to me, it's not even that they should be allowed to risk their lives. It's that by risking their lives and getting sick, they're going to risk other people's lives by the fact that the hospitals are going to get jammed up. And then people who are having actual emergencies are, going to have to wait.
Well, and also, but, did we had talked about herd immunity before, right? On another, so herd immunity, and there's a pretty good explanation that Bill Gates, I think, gives, on a TED talk somewhere that exists. But essentially, like, herd immunity is just wildly unethical. You'd need 50%+ of the population to get it, which is millions of Americans here. And then, think about all the people who are dying around the same time. You know, we basically, you got a glimpse of it with New York. There's all these dead bodies, right? Like, no place to bury them. Families are unable to, like, follow through on potential, like, cultural norms in burying their dead, getting closure. And you have toxic waste matter. Like, you know, there's so many ethical issues with it. Also, just saying, like, okay, well, we're okay with this many people dying. That's the mentality that we should be very, very uncomfortable with. We should not be saying, I'm okay with this many people dying. Because if you copy paste that and insert that into another political issue, and then we're like, oh, wait, I do care if it's genocide. I do care if it's cancer. I do care if it's these things. Like, regardless of your end goal there, and I've heard a lot of them, it's called human rights. And basic human rights, like, we have to do our due diligence to protect those lives. And even if you don't care about your life, you still have a responsibility to help take care or at least not endanger other people's lives, which is why we have laws.
Yeah. I mean, that makes sense. Right. I empathize with, you know, some of these people who are protesting in Michigan and other states that, you know, having grown up in Michigan, I know there's a lot of working class people there. And if you're feel like you're being forced to stay home and can't, you know, provide for your family or whatever, that's frustrating. But on the other hand, I think it's also socially irresponsible to want to go back out and go get your hair cut. I know that's the big joke that everybody's saying. Like, people are always talking about, you know, prepping for the end of the world, and now everybody wants out so they can go get a haircut. But yeah, I don't know. I think it's a tough call there.
Someday, when we do our final aftermath risk assessment of this, and it's going to be a very, very long time from now, there's going to be a lot of interesting questions. And I know that so many books are just going to be written around so many different areas, but the psychological warfare that people are experiencing right now with isolation, I'm surprised that there hasn't been a drastic increase in suicides. And, you know, we know from the educational standpoint, one thing that our school really had to set up is a crisis hotline. And we know that abuse significantly goes up at homes, drugs and alcohol go up and things like that. And so, you know, it's never just one disaster, as we say in emergency management. It is usually followed by several other hazards that go along with it. And so there's definitely an emotional warfare happening right now that's actually specifically more what I do at my day-to-day job is looking into those things, because isolation in and of itself is something that takes away the very fundamental part of a human's, and I, my opinion, a human's happiness, which is a sense of belonging and community.
No, yeah, for sure. And, but I think people have been doing a really good job at, you know, virtually connecting with people, and maybe that's why there hasn't been a huge spike in suicides and stuff. I feel like people have gone out of their way to check on people or check on their friends, but I could be wrong.
I was going to challenge you just a little bit on that. And the only reason is because the only people you have to compare that to are people who have access to technology.
That's true.
We had to order thousands of MiFis, and we had to give up also thousands of devices in our community, because so many of our families had no technology more than, in fact, we have, when we send out alerts, we also have to send out, like essentially like kind of like, I don't know how to explain it. We basically have to send out a type of picture that can still be accepted on flip phones, because some of our families, that's all they have in their home.
Hmm. Yeah, no, that's a really good point that I sometimes forget about, because I work in the technology industry, so I'm just kind of used to it. But yeah, and there's definitely people out there who don't have access to internet, and people out there who their main access to internet was, you know, the public library, which is now closed because of social distancing and because of the pandemic. I was going to say, like, how are you doing? Because I know at the beginning, you guys, my younger friends, were freaking out. and I was pretty chill, and now I'm freaking out and I haven't heard anything from you guys.
Oh.
Not like not checking in on me, but just like you guys, I haven't heard you guys freaking out.
I can speak for myself. I can't speak for everyone. You know, you and I both have some mutual friends that are, you know, just, they're just kind of doing their thing. I would say, and it, like for me personally, and I haven't even really talked to you guys about it that much, but I have had some very fascinating and amazing and beautiful experiences in the last several weeks that I've just been really, really fortunate to lean into. And, you know, aside from, you know, all the work and thick and, you know, all these opportunities happening, like for my internal self, there's been a lot of healing. Like I said, like, I started climbing and I had a lot of potholes, I guess you could say, in my heart and soul. And so the last several weeks have been enlightening, very spiritual. For me, I've been working on my relationship with God, and I have been finding community in that. And so again, the time apart has really made me sit down with myself and acknowledge where I'm at and put in the work to finally be comfortable and confident in my own skin. Because if I am going to be a leader in a community that advocates for that, I felt like I needed to model that and truly believe in it too.
Yeah, for sure. And it's kind of interesting that you bring that up, because I was just having a conversation with another guy that climbs locally that is kind of outside of our group. But he was saying, you know, how he was struggling and realizing that he was masking a lot of emotional issues with climbing. I think that's probably true in the community in general. And I was like, oh, yeah. And I started thinking about it. Like a few years ago, when I first lost weight, I was walking for like 3 or 4 hours a day sometimes just to get exercise. And I went through like a big depression because I was dealing with all these emotions. My dad was dying at the time and everything. And I ended up going to see a counselor. And I was just like thinking back on it now. I'm like, I'm glad I dealt with all that crap then, so I don't have to deal with it now. And I just think people are dealing with a lot of, you know, some people are dealing with a lot of stuff for sure.
Oh, yeah. This time is super triggering. I'm like, you know, I've talked about that. I think at first I was really worried about gaining weight. I was really worried about more than gaining weight. I was worried about losing all my progress. Like right before this happened, I had actually gotten injured probably like the weekend before we went on shutdown. I was the strongest I had ever been probably in my life. And so there was definitely like this initial catastrophic, like, you know, self-loathing, woe is me, once again, I can't have what, you know, I worked really hard for, sort of like mentality that was creeping up on me. But I feel like, again, through climbing, you learn so many lessons and you get put around some of the best people. And it's like, I knew better than to go down that hole. Like I knew better than to go to that place. And it was like, okay, like this is the season of your life. You know, being an athlete means that you're going to go through times of preparation and times of healing and times of being active. And so this is just the season you're in. And it's so important to lean into where you're at mentally and where you're at physically. And I mean, I kind of got lucky. Like I got injured and forced to rest, and I don't have to deal with FOMO right now because everyone has to rest.
Yeah, you can't climb. So, you know, the word. I mean, it's a good time to have gotten injured. And I think maybe that's part of the reason I haven't had a huge issue dealing with this. I've been injured enough times where I've had to sit for 6 weeks where I did have tons of FOMO and I just got over it. And now I'm kind of chill about it. But, and I will also say, don't get frustrated when we go back to climbing, because you will have lost something. It's just going to happen.
Oh, yeah.
I was going to say in the past, I've taken it as an opportunity to do things like, okay, I can't climb as hard as I did before. So now I'm just going to work on technique for a little while until that strength comes back or whatever. And, you know, you'll figure out what you want to do with that time. But
to that point, I think I have accepted that what was lost is lost, and also have progressed in other ways that I needed to. And so, it is what it is, you know, there's like, it just, that's just inherently part of being an active person. And the more stories I follow from other athletes, it's like to think that they are exempt from this is foolish. You know, like they've gone through periods of their own isolation, their own healing, self-doubt and recovery. It's just, you know, the difference though is between them and maybe people who don't come back and let their doubt eat them alive, or is just the fact that they didn't give themselves a choice to fail. They said, I'm going to do whatever it takes to continue doing what I love, but I'm going to do it in a sustainable way this time so that I don't repeat these mistakes that I've made before.
Yeah. I mean, you mean injury wise or?
Yeah, totally.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I've definitely had to have that. I think the last time I injured myself, I was like, should I go back to climbing? Like I had to have that conversation with myself, even though I still loved it. I was just like, what am I doing to my body? And that's just mainly because for the first 40 years of my life, I really hadn't had a major injury until I had my accident. And then after that, I just started, you know, since I turned 40, I've broken 4 or 5 bones.
Oh my God.
and I'd never broken anything before that. And, but then there's also part of me that's just like, what's the point of being 80 with, you know, great knees, you know? but there's a balance, right? You don't want to, you know, wear it out too soon. And you don't want to save too much. And you're going to end up on one side of it or the other. But yeah, there's part of me that every time I get injured, I'm like, is it worth it going back? Yeah. I guess it depends on how bad the injury was. I think last time I had a really minor fracture to my tibia. So, and it's also a struggle coming back from an injury like that. Just being afraid to injure yourself again.
I so relate to that. And I know, you know, like I do, because you saw me like literally go from being fearless to being like, okay, I'm going to go climb in the cave and like screw slab. Because of that last injury I had where I fractured a bone and have nerve damage in my foot. And that, you know, I was like, no, like it's just at the time I had some other goals in joining the military. And so I was like, it's just not worth it anymore. And so really, I think it comes down to like, you know, kind of the thought process you talked about, which is what's my end goal here? Like, do I want to, you know, is it to have fun? Is it for community? Is it to get big gains in it? And that full circle here is why it doesn't freaking matter what your body type is. It's what your goals are when you go to do the thing that you want to do, and having goals that make you happy and healthy and, you know, realistic and all the above. Cause it's like, my goal was to socialize and to have fun and really to stay out of trouble. And so when I took a step back, I was like, Mel, you don't need to be climbing V5s by the end of your first year. Like, what are you trying to prove? Like, what point are we trying to prove here? There's no point to prove. Okay, cool. Were you having fun when you're pushing yourself that hard? Kind of, but not as much fun as I was having when I was, you know, dicking around on, you know, V1s and V2s and V3s. So chill, you know, it's like, just chill, have fun.
Yeah, for sure. You and I and our friend Walter were supposed to go to Waco when this pandemic started. And we rightfully so made the smart decision to not go, because the first day we would have been able to climb, I think they closed Waco. And, but anyway, the other day I got the new guidebook for Waco Tanks and I started flipping through it, and they're just like, I had this comforting feeling thinking, you know what? I would like to climb like 15 of these V0s next time we go out there. Last time I went, I was like, oh, I want to push myself to climb a V1, my first V1 or whatever outside. And I was just like, I just want to climb a lot. Because I think last time I barely climbed anything because I was really trying to climb this V1. And I really wasn't pushing myself on anything else. And so I was just like, you know, let's just set a goal for ourselves to, let's see if we can climb 15 V0s the next time we're at Waco. And let's get into shape for that.
It sounds like such a beautiful thing. I honestly, if I only climb V0s outside, V0, V1s for like the rest of the time that I can climb, I'm not going to be upset about it. I'm going to look back and be like, I had so much fun, and hopefully I walked away from it in one piece. You know, it's like, you know, the goal for me isn't to trophy stack my grades. It's literally to go out there and do something that a year ago I never thought was possible. And honestly, I can't wait to go out there to Waco and climb and think back to this moment where I'm just like, you know, in a million pieces with different braces and casts all over my body, be like, you know, X amount of months ago, you couldn't walk around your building. Now you're up on a boulder again.
Yeah. And part of it for me is like, I would just like to feel comfortable and confident climbing outside. Ever since I broke my ankle, I've just always been worried about falling. There's been times when I've taken a really minor fall, like 2-3 feet, and twisted my broken ankle because there's just not a lot of flexibility in it anymore. And I would just like to go out and climb something and feel confident. And, you know, we have friends that go out and they climb stuff that I can't even imagine ever climbing, and they'll do it solo because they don't even care. They are so confident in their abilities. They're not even worried about falling and getting injured. Not that I would recommend bouldering solo, but a lot of people do it. Anyway, on the topic of goals, one of the revelations I've had over the past 2 weeks or so, a week or two so now, is that my goals for the year are just going to have to change. Not just climbing wise, but just in general. I've been doing a lot of climbing photography, and you and I were talking about this lens that I was going to buy, and I was really excited about it, and I thought it was going to, you know, really up my photography game, at least from a, you know, from what, as much as a lens can. And then I was like, you know what? I would think I'd rather invest that money into a home wall now, because I just don't know when I'm going to get back to the climbing gym. I don't know when I'm going to even get back outside, to be honest with you. Probably be outside before I get to a climbing gym, but I just having to reevaluate where those goals that I set in January and, you know, how I'm going to achieve them or just change them.
So are you going to do like a Drew style, like flat, like slab wall, or are you going to do like a moon board? Like, what are you going for?
I'm going to build a 20 degree wall that is either 8x8 or 6x8. And it's going to be 8 feet tall because that's all I can fit in my garage. It's not going to have a kickboard, so there's not going to be that flat board kind of like the moon board has. It's just going to, because 20 degrees is almost nothing. And yeah, I just want to have a place that my friends can come over to climb and we don't have to be around a million other people. And we know that it's just us touching the holds, and hopefully the people that come over are not doing other risky behaviors as far as not social distancing and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Other than the group of people that's hanging out, but we'll see. If not, then it's just going to be for me to climb on. I don't know, but yeah, I'm not going to do a slab wall. I just don't see the point of it, but Drew's wall is cool.
Yeah, it is really cool. It would be cool. Like, I feel like if I had a Drew type wall, which is slab, I would just, and I'm so weird. I have not met another person that's just like, I love traverses, but I do.
I was just gonna say you love a good traverse.
I know, I'm like so strange. Maybe it's because it's low to the ground. I don't know. But they're really pumpy and like, yeah. Anyways, so I could totally see myself building out a ton of traverses. Like, honestly, I'd go to Crux and sometimes I would just hang out up there. And I would session on their like slab bowl type thing up there, and I would just do a traverse back and forth, and I would just find different ways to try and make it across without pumping out and work on footwork.
Yeah. I mean, definitely there's a lot of stuff you can do on just a slab wall, and with, you know, just doing traverses and the wall like that he has, you could easily just practice sit starts, right? Cause it's, I don't know how tall that wall is, but it looks like it's 6 or 7 feet, and you could get a, you know, 2 or 3 good moves out of that if you do with a sit start. And I mean, the same thing with a 20 degree 8 foot board is not going to be a ton of moves. That's why I'm hoping to get 8 feet wide so that you can do some diagonal stuff as well. But yeah, I don't know. I think it's going to be cool, and I'm excited. It's the first time in a while that I've been excited about a project. And I'm excited to get back to climbing and to have the ability to train at home.
I can't wait to come over and go swimming and grill and climb, maybe. Maybe.
I know you have a whole plan. Well, yeah.
Oh, yeah. You make a...
Well, my apartment complex has got to open up the pool and all the community areas first. But I mean, I have a girl, so
we'll just get one of those kiddie pools.
Yeah, just get one for you.
Yeah.
What was I gonna say? But what about you as far as your goals for the year? Are they still on track? Or are you changing them? Or
oh, they're so changed. They're like they're super changed now. I am going to focus like just as hard as I can on healing. Like I've heard my body, my mind, my spirit speak. And it's like, you are go, go, go. You're going so hard, but like, that's not necessarily something you should be proud of. So I had to take a really honest step back and say, why am I going so hard? What am I pushing through? What is really considered hard work towards the things that are in alignment with what you should be doing versus like what are things that are you, like you're forcing. And so I'm going to focus on my health and getting all my ligaments and my tendons back in good working order. And I'm going to continue finishing the things that I started. So grad school, I'm going to put a lot of effort into thick, and I have a feeling, a really good feeling, that because I'm committing to being in alignment with some things, that some really awesome stuff is going to come up this year. Some really cool experiences will be coming up this year. So I'm really excited to see where I'm led.
Yeah, I mean, I could definitely see that. And I mean, I agree with you. I think that the rest of this year is going to be pretty awesome. But I'm not sure where it's going to take us, but I think it's going to be pretty cool. I've been working on a lot of stuff as well behind the scenes on my own brand and my own stuff that I'm excited to get out to the world. I used to always joke around that when I was unemployed, that I was busier than when I had a job. And now I have a job, but I'm also working from home, and I still have that level of busyness that it's weird. Cause like when you, I don't know if you've ever like been laid off or what, but like you get laid off from your job, and then all those people who you'd been talking about doing these side projects with just can't come out of the woodwork to take up, not to take up your time, but to start talking about them. And so all of a sudden I would become really, really busy, especially as a web developer. Everybody wants, you know, especially back in the day, everybody wanted a web developer to help them with their idea, their app or whatever. And then now it just feels like I have all these irons in the fire. And not only that, but I'm still doing my day job 8 hours a day, 5 days a week.
You've been so busy. Like, yeah, I mean, I feel like, I don't know, we've both been really, really busy. And like, I think about that too. And I'm like, hey, Jeremy, I need you to like, can you absorb this on your plate? Like, are you able to take this? Are you able to do this? And I'm like, oh, like, I know you're so busy. But I also feel like, you know, you said it earlier about me with emergency management. I also feel like I've seen you be more stoked about what you're working on lately, like just being able to be headfirst in all these creative projects. And I definitely see the creative part of you coming out, and it's really been enjoyable for me to observe from the outside, because it's definitely bringing out this side of you that I think people can really appreciate if they haven't already started to appreciate.
That's cool. I haven't really noticed it, but yeah, it's fun to, yeah, you know, one of the things that happened after I had my crash was that at the time I was doing like a motorcycle vlog, even though it was a Vespa. It wasn't really a motorcycle, but whatever. It's the same risk. But I was doing this vlog, and it pretty much had taken up all my time. And then as soon as that accident happened and I knew I wasn't going to go back to riding, I just didn't have anything on my plate. And that's kind of like when exercising and, you know, watching what I ate and all that started. And then Walter and I started climbing together, and that kind of took over my life as well. But and I just missed the creativity. And that's one of the reasons why I started my Instagram account, is because I wanted to be creative. And at first it was all just pictures. Like I would take my GoPro up and I'd put like the time lapse photo on, and I would just try to find cool angles to take pictures of myself climbing. I also like taking pictures of myself climbing, because taking pictures of it allows you to like control the narrative. Whereas if you're taking a video, you just, if you have bad footwork, it just shows up. There's nothing you can do about it.
Remember
but,
the time I took a video for you?
Oh yeah.
Like in the most polite way, came back and you're like, no.
Don't do that. You tried to get like some super low, weird, artsy angle, and I'm like, yeah, you couldn't really see anything.
I think I was really lazy and just sat down. And then I was also like, how are you supposed to get the whole wall in this tiny little frame? Because I take photos, I don't take videos. And so I was like, oh, let me record this vertically. I didn't know.
Well, to be fair, I probably just shoved my camera in your hand and said, take a video of me. Because I'm just so used to it that at this point in everything, like all my friends are just used to me handing them a camera and saying, take a video of me. Although I don't really climb with you guys that much anymore, like inside. So less these days.
Yeah, I like towards the end, I think all of us were kind of starting to do our thing a little bit. But I know I was low-key, I was actually trying to start weaning off of climbing as much as I was, because I knew I was a lot more injured than probably what I had been communicating to all my friends, because I didn't want to miss out on doing fun things. Like, that was definitely the, like, addictive personality in me, being like, I don't want to miss out on the fun stuff. But I was trying to go back down to climbing maybe once or twice a week, and also my goals had shifted because I was training for the guard. And so I knew that I needed to really focus on that physical fitness test at that time.
No, yeah, that definitely makes sense. I think it was kind of weird because we had this really tight group of people that climbed three or four times a week together. And then we all kind of, a few of us at least, kind of decided that we needed to do other things, but in your case, do something else. And me climb somewhere else and climb by myself. I needed that time by myself, and I needed to focus on what made me enjoy climbing. And I got really hung up on the community side of it, or the hang part of it. And I wasn't focusing as much on my climbing as I really wanted to.
Yeah.
So by going somewhere else where there was less of a crowd, which was, I have like a crowd anxiety, so that was really bothering me. And then just stepping away from everybody helped me with my climb, but it also, I also really missed everybody as well. So,
well, everyone, honestly, like January, New Year's really screwed everyone up, because the gym that we all went to, we couldn't really go to anymore and enjoy, because like you said, it was just a safety hazard. And also around that time, you know, I know I had started to realize what style I liked, and the style that I like is not the style that everyone else likes. In fact, you're really the only other person I know that enjoys kind of the style I'm into. And so you and I both climb over at NARG in North Austin, because that's our, yep, one of our favorite gyms. And so what I can say though is like everyone else is into some different styles of climbing. And so that really ended up being a thing where it's like, okay, not all of us have money to spend on three different memberships. You know, some of us were like, we're not climbing at the OG gym anymore, at least for now, until it calms down. Some of us were like, okay, well, you know, Crux is really close, but I wanted to mix it up. And so, yeah, I was just going back and forth between those gyms. But yeah, I don't know. I really, really hope that NARG makes it. Like, I just got to say, they are my favorite, like my favorite routes, my favorite setting, and it's a super small and intimate climbing session. So it's one of the only places that I actually also feel comfortable climbing completely by myself.
Yeah. So in Austin, there's a gym, it's called it's Austin Rock Gym, but everybody calls it North Austin Rock Gym, because there used to be a South Austin Rock Gym, which is now closed. It's a really small gym owned by a couple, and we're all afraid that it's going to be too hard for them to stay open during this whole thing. So I don't know. I know the owners and I haven't talked to them about it, but when I have a chance, I'll hit them up and see how they're doing. But yeah, I hope they survive too, because the community needs that style of gym. Like, it's the exact opposite of a commercial enterprise. They set hard. It's small. It's like you said, there's, you know, it's, I don't know. I love it there.
Yeah. Agreed.
Because you know, if you can climb like a V1 or a V, or an actual V2, not that one that we climbed the other day. You could probably climb like a V0 outside if you're climbing a V1 in there or a V2. That's, you know, whereas I feel like at some gyms, like especially our OG gym, like the grade jump from inside to outside is like more like 3 or 4 grades, not just like 1 or 2. Mm-hmm. So, and it's also not like a very, the other gyms in town don't really set, like I feel like NARG sets like in an outdoor style. Like,
yes, they are. So. I think they even brand themselves as being a gym to crag.
And so, they do. Yeah.
Because I would personally identify as someone who thoroughly enjoys outdoor climbing. Not, I don't say way more, but that is my preference. I want that to be more of an outdoor climber. That's when everything clicked for me. I love to train over at NARG.
Yeah, for sure. And that's what the other thing I was going to say is we thankfully spent a lot of time outside at the beginning of this year. And I can't wait for us to get outside again.
Me too, bro.
I honestly think that it's going to happen before we go back to the gym.
Oh.
So I wouldn't feel uncomfortable climbing with you guys outside right now.
Yeah, I think that, like, well, I'm not even going to stay on here, but I'll text you. There's a couple places I was thinking about. I won't be going to any gyms, climbing or working out gyms for, unfortunately, a really long time for multiple reasons. But the thing is like, you know, you don't need to go to a gym. The gym is really replicating things that we do outside. And so this is really a strong encouragement to do what I already love, which is being outside, finding natural features to climb or work out with, and exploring and adventuring. And so this is a beautiful time for that. And at some point we can sit down and kind of map it out. I successfully hung off of a hangboard the other day for about 5 seconds, and I couldn't do that 2 weeks ago. So I think we're getting a little bit closer to being able to climb outside.
Well, yeah. And we're also, I'm not sure that we're at a point yet where it's socially responsible to put yourself in harm's way outside, but I'm just feeling like, I'm just talking about like pandemic wise. I know you guys have all been sheltering in place, and I'm not that worried about that, but are we at a point yet where it's worth taking the risk of like breaking a leg and having to go to the hospital to get that set? I don't think so, but maybe in a couple months, we'll see, depending on if there's a huge spike again or not.
I see what you're saying. And unfortunately, some of the places that would be a little bit better to climb at to lower
are smaller towns. And
well, they're, everyone knows about them. Right.
Oh, like, yeah.
There's 2 or 3 I'm thinking of. I'm like, yeah, that's where everyone's going to go. And so I'm like, meh, I'm just not going to do that. Like, I have a mountain bike. I'll probably be riding for a while. Hopefully some like bodies of water open up. So I'll do that. Hopefully some of my friends like you get some home walls built. I'll do that. But again, there's different seasons of everyone's lives. And this is just the season where you got to find other ways to stay active.
Definitely. I've been doing a lot of push-ups.
I saw that.
Started doing squats too.
Good for you.
It hurts my knees. I don't know. Maybe I'm doing it wrong.
You have to make sure that your knee isn't over your foot.
I've been doing my best. All right. So we've been going for an hour, which is awesome. And because we were like 20 minutes in, I'm like, I don't know what else we're going to talk about. but usually at the end, we do a section where we do either shout outs or recommendations. So I don't know if you have a shout out or recommendation that you wanted to give.
In like what category?
Anything.
Well, obviously, I'm going to shout out all of our Thick Climbing ambassadors. They have such a powerful and strong presence and role in what we're doing. And I just know you and I would not have been able to do what we've been doing if it weren't for them. And so they're really the muscle behind everything that's happening right now. They are more than, you know, simply people who are wearing clothing and, you know, whatever. They're literally, they're talking to gyms, they're talking to professionals, they're talking to their friends, and they're being vulnerable and sharing their story. So I got a huge shout out for them. Also, obviously, and of course, I always have a huge shout out for Bree, Gnarly Girl Fitness on Instagram, because she's just had so many profound impacts in my life, and I just know that I'm forever grateful for the things that she's done. And last but not least, huge shout out to you, Jeremy. Thank you for believing in the dreams and doing what you're doing, keeping your thumbs behind my back and pushing me to climb harder, to be better, and just honestly being a good friend. Just really appreciate you.
Thank you very much. I will also say that our Thick Ambassadors are super impressive and inspiring. And yeah, every day I'm like and amazed by them. And again, I will second Bree. I used to work with her constantly, and now it's just more here and there as needed. But yeah, she's great. And I always think of her handle as Gnarly Gruel Nutrition. She changed it to fitness, right?
Let me check. Yeah, it's not.
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, it's Gnarly Gruel.
I'm pretty sure. I think it used to be nutrition, but so don't screw that up. I'll put it in the show notes correctly. And I also wanted to give a shout out to Troy Wilson. He is one of the owners of North Austin Rock Gym or Austin Rock Gym. And he is also helping people with their home wall design and building and all that during this time. And if you're looking for some advice or some information, hit him up on Instagram. I'll put his handle down in the show notes. Well, is there anything else you'd like to finish off with?
No. Thanks for having me. Is this